we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
How do you get legalized kickbacks? Become a pharmacy benefit manager. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to this episode of America Out Loud Pulse. So let's talk. We know there's a lot of flaws in the delivery of our medical care, but the insertion of third parties into the patient-physician relationship seems to be at the core of such problems. There's lots of pieces in this healthcare pie, and corruption and fraud are the last things we need. So in Congress, in 1972, Congress passed a law that outlawed kickbacks for referrals for medical care and other contracts. And this was to make sure referrals of patients to other medical care professionals were in the best interest of patients. So far, so good. But 25 years ago, the government made exceptions to this anti-kickback law. And this allowed middlemen to do some fancy footwork when negotiating prices. In the world of prescription drugs, pharmacy benefit managers, better known as PBMs, are the middlemen. They started as a way to help manage prescription drug costs and overall benefits for patients. Now the industry promotes the notion that they save patients money. Well, it's not true. We've got a system where after insurance, a drug can cost $150 for the patient, whereas with something like GoodRx, you can get the same drug for $6. And the combined revenues of the three companies that control almost 90% of the PBM market are almost $750 billion. Well, today, you're going to get the who, what, where, when, and why of how this system of pharmacy benefit managers has morphed into a big money-making scheme, and patients are left holding the bag. My guest today has been working nonstop to cut out the middlemen, lower the price of drugs, and most of all, always put patients first. Dr. Marion Mass is the co-founder of the Nonpartisan Practicing Physicians of America. She graduated from Duke University Medical School and completed her residency at Northwestern's Children's Hospital. She currently practices at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Mass has published numerous articles on healthcare costs and quality in multiple outlets, including the Wall Street Journal and the Philadelphia Inquirer. She has led two symposiums at the Library of Congress on health policy. Welcome, Dr. Mass.
Dr. Singleton, I'm just delighted and honored that you thought to ask me to come and talk about PBMs, one of my favorite topics.
Well, who else would I ask, my dear? So let's just get started. So like I said, we have a lot of problems in providing medical care to make sure all Americans get it. Today, we're going to focus on these PBMs. And just so people know, this isn't academics. It's not just policy wonks. There are patients hidden behind all the double talk and all these non-transparent practices. Dr. Mass, I understand you had an episode with your mother's medical care that really brought home a lot of these issues. Can you just briefly tell us about it?
Yes. So 3 weeks after my father passed away and he had lived with us on hospice, my mother, who was institutionalized for Alzheimer's and not able to grieve, lashed out and was hospitalized an hour and a half from my home. She was getting violent, and the hospital that she was at was an accoladed hospital. She had what I guess was called excellent Medicare Advantage coverage, and the hospital didn't do the most basic thing. For the 3 days that I could not make it the hour and a half each way driving, because I had missed a lot of work in having my father live with us on hospice and then in burying him, and God, you know, may they both rest in peace. But the hospital didn't do the most basic thing during the 3 days that I couldn't get there. They didn't give my mother enough to drink. In 3 days, she got about 12 ounces and they didn't even notice. They told us she was ready for discharge. And I went and I found her obtunded. I reported to the Joint Commission and the Board of Health in Pennsylvania less than a year later at the very same accoladed hospital. A friend of mine had the same thing happen to her set of parents. Mm. Alzheimer's parent hospitalized, getting care, not getting answers, not getting good care, not getting answers after I made reports. And I, you know, I was already involved and already starting to dissect the system. And I did cry, right? Of course I cried. This is my mother. I'm the only daughter. There were five of us. You know, it's just, this is the most, at the time she was one the closest woman on the planet to me. And I dried my tears and I decided that this must be a reason. There must be a reason this happened. I need to go and I need to dissect this, because if this is happening at an accoladed hospital with good coverage with someone like me, who I really don't care, I'll tell it like it is, then what's going to be happening in Kensington section of Philadelphia, in downtown Los Angeles, in Detroit's hospitals, where patients don't know what I know. They don't have the medical degrees. They can't speak for their families in the same way that I can. They don't know how to move the system. They don't, you know, and maybe they're afraid. What happens to all of those people? And you know what? I'll tell you, I had one heck of a mom. She would have taken that whole episode of humiliation again if she knew that we could help someone and change and fix the system, the landscape, make medicine better.
Wow. What a story. And, you know, you hate to hear it, but we have to hear it. And these things happen to so many people. And you mentioned that folks in other areas might be afraid to say something. And I have actually heard patients say that because they're afraid of some sort of retaliation. Like, if I open my big mouth, then they're going to treat my mother poorly. And I hate to say this, I'm sure things like that have probably happened. So we've got a long way to go in this healthcare system. Well, today, and with your help, we're going to talk about one area. And you just let me know everything you're doing. And again, this is Pharmacy Benefit Managers, PBMs, as we call them. It's pharmacy benefits, quite the mouthful. And let's think about it. At least 3/4 of Americans take some sort of medication. And yeah, we know it costs for production, it costs for advertising and all that. But there's something fishy about the cost to patients. And this is where these PBMs come in. So Dr. Mass, tell us how these PBMs really don't help patients like they say, but actually harm patients.
Well, so many things to say here. So to really get everyone's attention, let's lay it out on the line, because everyone should care about their own money, right? So if we've been paying to Medicare, or our employer is paying our healthcare costs on behalf of us, like 60% of Americans, or if we're paying individually for our own healthcare, or we're paying co-pays for drugs, or we're paying secondary insurance to get drugs, to get medications that we need to live, things like insulin, things like EpiPens, then we're paying money and we should care about our own money. So let's start with taking a look at where companies that own PBMs are on the Fortune 500. I've got the Fortune 500 updated list sitting right here in front of me. CVS Health, which owns CVS Caremark, which is one of the three big PBMs. CVS Health is number 4 in the Fortune 500. And by the way, 60% of the revenues come from their PBMs. United Health Group, they own Optum, one of the other 3 big PBMs. They're number 5 on the Fortune 500. So we've got number 4 and we've got number 5. Well, guess what? Coming in at number 13 is Cigna. Cigna bought the 3rd biggest PBM in the country, Express Scripts, I think about 2 years ago. And when they did, the revenues tripled. I think they moved from number 57 on the list to number 13. Well, of course they did, because Express Scripts, the PBM, is Cigna's moneymaker. Optum, which owns a PBM, is United Healthcare's moneymaker. CVS Caremark is CVS's moneymaker. The PBMs are the cash cows for the insurance companies that everyone blames. They're the moneymakers. So what should we talk about next? What PBMs are, what they do, what they don't do? Your choice.
Well, start off, well, you kind of got into it. We're going to go kind of to two things. How they started off and kind of what they advertise themselves as doing, why patients don't notice that this is not necessarily a good thing. So what are they supposed to be doing?
Well, even today, because they just took a shellacking at a Senate hearing last week, the head lobbyist for the PCMA, which is the lobby group for the PBMs, boy, oh boy, did he take a beating. And, you know, too bad. I mean, I guess he's a good lobbyist. The Hill, the publication, The Hill, calls him one of the best lobbyists on the Hill, on Capitol Hill.
I don't know if that's a compliment.
I never call myself a lobbyist. I call myself an advocate. So, I mean, you know what? Just tell America, this is one of the best lobbyists here, and see what they say. So exactly. PCMA is the functional lobby arm for the big PBMs. And you can pull them up today that because of this shellacking that their head lobbyist of the PBMs took on the Hill last week at the hands of both Republican and Democrat lawmakers. It's astounding. They're both going after them. They're both getting it. It was Senator Blumenthal and, the senator from Tennessee.
Marsha Blackburn.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. Too many names in the head. They both had a lot to say to this gentleman and a lot of questions that he didn't seem to be answering. But now they have their shiny little stuff that's coming out on social media and their shiny little things that say, always on your RX side. PBMs coordinate the healthcare of 266 million Americans. Well, yes, they do. And it's a problem. So the PBMs, initially, they were companies that were to control the medication costs for America's insurance companies, the big insurance companies. And now I just got over telling you the insurance companies now own the PBMs or the PBMs own the insurance companies. So there's a conflict of interest right there. However, they're claiming to control the costs of pharmaceutical products. It's not working, is it? They don't appear to be controlling the costs. And if you look at a famous example as of late, I did a whole talk on this, and I hopefully should have the transcript of it soon. But I presented last night at the Los Angeles Commission of Health to all the commissioners on health about the last insulin bill that was passed in the House and about how the cost of insulin is really the rising cost of insulin. 80% of it is going to the PBMs. The middlemen are sucking up all of the cost or a good portion of the cost. So companies that don't do any manufacturing, they don't do any research, they don't even really move the medications around. There's distributors that do that. They simply make the formularies to decide which medications get covered by insurance companies, which means that those are the medications that Americans end up taking. I mean, silly us, when we went to medical school, Dr. Singleton, we thought when we wrote a prescription, we were the ones choosing and making the decision for what our patient needed and that would be what our patient got. But that's not true anymore. It's the PBMs. It's the suits. It's not the scrubs.
Well, so what you're saying, and just so people get this clear, sometimes the doctor can write a prescription for drug X, but because of the PBM special formularies and whatnot, they can substitute drug Y. And it's presumably the same thing for the same problem, but it might not be.
Well, the PBMs create the formularies, but unfortunately, to get to the root cause of how the PBMs got so rich, and you know, if there's three rules we should all follow in healthcare, those rules are: number one, follow the money; rule number two, follow the money; and rule number three, follow the money. So if you look at how the PBMs began to get so rich and their epic moment, their big bang moment when they started minting the big Benjamins in 2003, the very same year that Congress passed and President G.W. Bush signed Medicare Part D, which was like, think of Medicare Part D as the ACA for prescription drugs. Now, well, or think of it, it's Medicare for prescription drugs, right? But it means that our Medicare patients were going to get the prescription costs covered. At the same time, that very year, the HHS secretary, and I believe it was Tommy Thompson, who's on the board of a big insurance company, Centene, who owns their own PBM, or who recently left that board, they allowed those PBMs to have an exemption from the kickback law that you mentioned. Let's say that again. The PBMs got an exemption from the kickback law. That means those PBMs are allowed to accept kickbacks and they don't get prosecuted. A get out of jail free card for kickbacks. Imagine if I were an iced tea maker and I could just go pay 7-Eleven or Wawa and pay them an extraordinary amount of money to corner the market. You know, it's like the kind of seemingly illegal activity that went on in the movie Trading Places, one of my favorites, right? The Dukes are trying to corner the market, remember? But except it's perfectly legal because our Congress said so. And from that time, the PBMs became the big moneymakers.
Well, let me stop you there because we have so much to go into with the corruption and, you know, contract terms, rebates, all these other things. And I want you to explain that to the folks. So we'll talk about that when we come around on the other side. Now, in the meantime, I just want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. And I hope you're enjoying the show, if you can call it enjoying hearing all this stuff. But these are things we need to know. Now, for our show, we've got free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 and an encore at 10 Eastern and the next day on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. while you're on your way to work. All shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours, and we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart, and several others. So make it easy on yourself. Just bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Surely if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Okay, Dr. Mass, this is when I wish I had a chalkboard, you know, so you could see when you talk about follow the money, and there's so many trails, and there's so many ways that, I guess I'll just say it, that these pigs can feed at the trough. So tell us about all this stuff, you know, rebates and contracts and all this stuff. So let it go. Tell us.
Well, let's not insult the pigs. I kind of like pigs, but not these guys. So first of all, let's talk about that word rebate. Now, when you picture a rebate, don't you picture like there you are at home and you send in your little coupon because you, the consumer or the patient in this case in medicine, are going to get some money back. That's what you picture when you hear rebate, right?
Right.
You think that these like so-called rebates are going to the patients? Knowing that
you
it's
would
the,
think.
They're dirty, greedy pigs. Well, right. So did I. I got very concerned. And like for years now, my mantra has been like, don't call them rebates, call them kickbacks, because they are. So the term that they use in the industry is like rebates, and they keep on saying rebate. So if you go back to insulin, because it's a very famous example right now, and you look at the, you know, the companies that make insulin and Sanofi, one of the companies that makes the major type of insulin, Humalog, I believe is their brand name, their list price of insulin versus their net price are two divergent lines. The net price is what the pharmaceutical company is taking home. And insulin, although it costs about $10 a vial to make, to manufacture, they're taking home about $50 for it. But the list price is $350. And the list price is equal to what the pharmaceutical company takes home, plus all of those kickbacks collected by the PBMs. So the total cost of insulin per vial, and keep in mind that some insulin-dependent diabetics in America, and there's over a million type 1 diabetics in America who require insulin, and close to 250,000 children, and I'm a pediatrician, and that matters to me. They require insulin to live. And we're all functionally paying through our insurance or through Medicare or through Medicaid or however we're paying at the pharmacy a counter. The total cost of insulin, that list price, is $350 when it should be 10 or maybe a little bit more than 10. And 80% of that is going to the PBMs. And as that number has gone up, from 125 to 200 to 250 to 350, the steep rise is due to the PBM kickbacks. And functionally, actually, the pharmaceutical companies are making less and less on insulin. Now, also of interest, if you look at Lilly's products, Lilly actually put a generic product out there, but that's not what's on the formulary for a lot of Medicare Advantage plans or for a lot of commercial insurances. They're not going to pick the less expensive generic brand or generic form of insulin. They're going to pick the brand because the more expensive the baseline, the more expensive branded product is going to earn a bigger kickback for the PBM. Not only are they collecting kickbacks and choosing functionally which pharmaceutical company's product is going to be on the formulary, and of course, you know, if you get paid more by a pharmaceutical company, you're going to probably want to pick their product if you're making more, right? But they're also picking the product that costs more.
Well, let's get this straight. Let's say there's an insulin product that costs $100 and they say, well, we're going to give you a 10% discount. So that means it's only $90. But if the insulin product costs $50 or even $20 and it's that same 10% discount, it's going to be $5 or $2. So they want to have you buy the most expensive one, since that discount, supposedly, even though it goes back to them, will end up being higher. So the higher the price, the higher, well, as you say, as it is, higher the kickback. It's wrong.
Right. It's like going and buying the designer purse and then telling your spouse, look, I saved, you know, $1,700 on this purse, you know, because I bought it at needless markups, you know, when you could have gone to another place and saved on a lower price, but, you know, it's going to make it sound better for you. it's going to make it sound as though you saved more, but it's only because you were spending more.
Right, right. Good analogy. Not that I don't know who goes to Neiman Marcus anymore and buys full price anything.
I go to thrift stores.
Give me the dollar store. Sorry.
I have an alligator Valentino bag that my mother got at a thrift store years ago. I love that bag. I'll show it to you the next time we're together.
It's pretty disgusting. What are some of the other things that are part of these PBM contracts? For what you can know, I imagine these contracts are secret.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. And in fact, I believe it was, I may get the details wrong, but we'll get the gist of it here. Ohio has been absolutely phenomenal at uncovering some of what's going on with the PBMs. And one of the big PBMs in Ohio, I think something had gotten leaked about the contracts, and they fought in court to cover it up, because these kickbacks, the kickback contracts, are secretive. No one sees them. So something that the government legalized that no one else has. I mean, I can't collect a kickback without getting prosecuted. You can't. I mean, the iced tea companies can't. You know, the purse companies can't. The beef companies can't, unless there's like something that I don't know about. Maybe all these organizations can, but I'm pretty sure not. So our government legalized this, but then they're claiming they have the right to keep the kickback contract secret, which makes no sense to me. If you have a special right, you know, that was given to you by a law that makes no sense and no one else has to follow, then it would seem to follow me that we need to have some transparency on the kickback contracts.
And have some oversight on it, since you allowed them this big exception to a very strong rule, then there should be oversight.
Oh, of course there should be. And like, I mean, look, I'm just like crazy enough to drive down to Washington, D.C. and to show up at hearings where they're talking about these things. And like, I've been doing this since like showing up at the hearings level since 2018. And I hear it in there. I've heard senators. I've gone to a Senate hearing where someone actually used the word kickback. They know what's going on. But have they done anything since 2018? No, of course not. Can you imagine if you were so slow at taking care of one of your patients that, oh, wait, their heart rate is 20. I think I'll wait 3 years and see what happens. No, of course not. Your patient will be dead.
Well, you know? Dr. Mass, let's go back to one of your three rules. Follow the money. It makes me wonder how many of these senators are getting money from the same organizations that are doing these nefarious deeds.
Yes. And of course, like the way that, I am told that the lawmakers hate it when you sort of imply that, although there's certainly a lot of money, like, you know, flying around Washington, D.C. You know, now, if you think about it, we discussed at the beginning how insurance companies and PBMs own each other. And I also pointed out that, the pharmaceutical companies have been paying to get their products on the formulary. So you see, everyone has a monopoly. You know, we have like five big insurance companies that are controlling most insurance in America. We have three PBMs that are controlling 70%, 77% of all prescription drug movement. And then we've got like, you know, a bunch of pharmaceutical companies that are big pharmaceutical companies that can afford the kickbacks, but then they have the monopoly product themselves. I mean, insulin, we're lucky there's three companies, because there's other medications for which there's a single drug. You know, you remember EpiPen? I do. 1 in 13 children has life-threatening food allergies, and it became the only product. Gosh, wonder how that happened. But then you can see how everyone wants the system to keep going like it is when they're the ones that are making the money. May I tell you a very funny story about my son in first grade?
Do tell.
He was so cute. He got a packet of like markers, and people were sharing his markers. And another girl in the class came in and she got a packet of 20 Crayola markers. And a friend of ours worked for Crayola because it's near us here in Pennsylvania. And he brought home a packet of 50 Crayola markers. And then this girl got a 75 packet. And, you know, these two are vying to become like the coveted marker, you know, czar of the classroom in first grade. And then the guy who gave us the Crayola marker said to my son, "Do you want me to get the 100 pack?" And Brian thought about it for a minute. And he said, "You know what? When you're in first grade and you're, you know, you're a popular girl. You don't want your popularity to get taken away. And so I think it's probably a bad idea. She'll be really mad at me. You want to keep your power when you're in that position. So mm-hmm. you have the same thing going on here, right? You have these people that they're now, you know, the maker of EpiPen, you know, it becomes the monopolized product. And then the PBM, you know, three of them are monopolizing most of the market. And the insurance companies are monopolizing too. And now they have their cash cows in there. No one wants to give up the money stream. So what I suspect is happening, there's definitely a subset of lawmakers who know, but the fear is these lawmakers who know, if they speak out, out they go and they can't do anything. And I think that there's a set of lawmakers that know and are just going to keep on taking the money. And then there's a set of lawmakers that have no idea what's going on. I mean, it's painful to listen to the hearings. I think when they did the hearings on the Affordable Insulin Now bill, I heard a lawmaker from your neck of the woods in California talk about the rebates and say, we have to have rebates because I used to clip coupons. We can't not have rebates. Like, I mean, they just didn't understand. So I think there's a bunch that don't understand. And then there's a lot that just listen to what I call the convenient untruths. Because if you're the person making all the money, you're just going to make it sound as though, wow, this is great. This is what we have for you. And, you know, we're saving money. And here, let's show you the charts. And you know how statistics are.
What did Mark Twain say? Lies, 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 and statistics.
Exactly. So you can pick the stats that you want. And, you know, you can see the lobby group of the PBMs doing it today. They're telling everyone we're the ones that are saving the money. They had the nerve to say at some of these Senate hearings, we're the only member of the team that's saving the patient money. Oh my Lord. Like, how can you get up there with a straight face? How do you sleep in your bed between the satin sheets at night comfortably? I just don't get it. But, you know, that's me and you, Dr. Singleton.
One of the things I understand they have in some of these contracts are so-called gag clauses, where the pharmacist isn't supposed to be able to tell the patient, you know, Mr. Smith, if you just handed me some cash, this would be cheaper than what your copay is. And there are the PBMs behind that?
They certainly were. But to my knowledge, the gag clauses were removed. So that's out of the picture. But,
thank
you know, of
goodness.
Course, yes, yes, no, I know. So they do get something right. But, you know, it's really interesting because it's almost as though the PBMs have so many revenue streams. You know, I guess you use the word pig, but like, I guess maybe it's octopus that might be a better analogy, because they have like tentacles that are just going in different directions and, you know, sucking up money. Had you heard about the spread?
No.
The PBMs?
No.
Oh, yes. This one is very interesting. So here's what the spread is. So of course, we should be trusting companies that are allowed to receive kickbacks and want to do so. Companies that give us damned statistics and tell us that they're saving us money. But that's exactly what the states do. So Medicaid, of course, is a program that was originally conceived to help the neediest of the nation. And it's a joint federal and state program, which functionally means that the states and the feds just blame each other when something goes wrong and nothing ever gets done, right? So in all of their wisdom, many of our states have hired the three big PBMs and some of the other players to manage their Medicaid prescription drug programs, right? So what the PBMs are supposed to do in these cases, besides make the Medicaid formularies, they are supposed to take the money that comes from the employers or the insurers that they get and use that money to pay the pharmacies, right? So like they're just transferring money. They're like a bunch of bookies, really. What they got caught doing first in Ohio, and since they have been caught doing the same thing in Arkansas and Florida, I believe Mississippi and several other states. But what they got caught doing was just keeping $225 million per year for themselves. Like, here comes the money that's marked for Medicaid that we're getting, and now, instead of paying that money to the pharmacy who should be getting the money, we're just going to keep an extra $225 million to ourselves. We're going to help ourselves to Medicaid money. It's like thievery. But there's no transparency there either. And the other thing to realize, like one of the three big PBMs that I bet you could guess right from the top that owns a lot of pharmacies in America, which one? Come on, you know which one.
CVS.
Yes, another three terrible letters. I bet we could come up with, like, I don't know, central villain casting, you know, company or something. You know, we'll come up with better letters for CVS. So CVS, of course, the PBM is paying the pharmacy. So they're paying themselves. They can choose to pay their own CVS pharmacies more. And you know who they can pay less to? The independent pharmacies. So the little mom and pop pharmacies, and there's tens of thousands of them around the country. And they actually have a wonderful advocacy organization. You know, PUT, I forget what it stands for, but there's multiple independent pharmacy organizations. So these independent pharmacies now, they're getting less because the pharmacy, the PBM is paying less to the independent, or can be at least. There's no transparency for it. And then there are cases in which the independent pharmacy gets driven out of business in part because of these, the spread that I described, where they just rob Medicaid, because they'll come along later and they'll say to the independent pharmacy, hey, you know, we'd like to buy you out. Well, of course they want to. CVS would love to have another pharmacy and put another fake little, you know, robot appearing heart on the corner store. That store ain't got no heart. It is a robot appearing heart. So there's another revenue stream for them. Can you handle hearing more? Or are we?
Well, that I need to take a break. I have to go hyperventilate. But right now, I will thank everybody for listening to this. And, you know, everybody go out and get a glass of water or something stronger so you can hear the final push on all this. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. We've got our free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And remember, you can hear us every day, a different doctor every day at 5 p.m. Eastern with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio the next morning at 8 a.m. And all shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours and on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart, and many others. And on our America Out Loud page, it's got the whole list of places you can hear the podcast. So bookmark AmericaOutloud.com.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly, acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products: toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
All this stuff, I'll tell you, this idea of everybody owning everything in the stream, they call that, and the FTC kind of looks at that, these vertical mergers. And I remember, because this was the kind of insurance I had, when CVS and Aetna merged. Now, Aetna was supplying health insurance. CVS, the products, the pharmacy products, and CVS even had these in-store clinics. So what did Aetna do? When the same company owns all the services, they pushed the patients toward their own services. So a lot of patients who had Aetna, they said, oh, sorry, you can't go to the doctor that you always went to. You've got to go somewhere who's in the plan that's intertwined with CVS. And so you've got that problem. Dr. Mast mentioned the problem of how the CVS PBMs pays less to the independent pharmacist and they charge Medicaid more. I saw some numbers that popped out, and I'm sure you saw them. This happened in Ohio, where there is a medicine, 18 cents per capsule. The PBM charged Medicaid $1.53. They gave the independent pharmacist only 20 cents. There, you know, it's so wrong. And like you say, it's sad that the senators are so clueless about it, but I guess that's why they have people like you to keep on talking about it. And you've got to get everyday people to listen, because it is kind of a complex story. And most people just go buy the drugs, throw up their hands and say, there's nothing I can do about it. And that's what's kind of sad. They almost have us beaten into submission. I tell you, what more do you think people can do? What can they say when they go up to the counter to get the drug? What can they ask the pharmacist?
Well, I'd actually like to concentrate on, I mean, I guess, you know, first of all, they could try to switch to an independent pharmacy and show some support for them. Because as I pointed out, those guys are getting hit hard. And we could even do a whole segment on like what happens to them. I think for the current time, what really makes sense to me is when you know that there's big news that the lawmakers have to do something about, that's when you really get to them. And so now we have an opportunity, because the very last day of March, the House passed the Affordable Insulin Now Act. And my own newspaper here in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, wrote a guest editorial that the Affordable Insulin Now Act does not live up to its name. I had a letter to the editor published in the Wall Street Journal that the Affordable Insulin Now Act is not doing anything to lower the cost of insulin. Even a Democratic lawmaker that voted for the bill, Lloyd Doggett of Texas, said, this bill does nothing to lower the cost of insulin even by a penny. He said that on the same day the bill was passed. But now you have lawmakers in the press, many of them running around saying, we lowered the cost of insulin. No, they didn't. They lowered the copay. The kickbacks will still be flowing to the PBMs. They'll just be paid by the taxpayers, by Medicare, by everyone's grandchildren, because no one's getting a lower cost for insulin. It's a lower copay. The big inflated cost of insulin is still going to have to be paid by the uninsured, because this bill only works for those with Medicare and commercial insurance. It's a travesty. It's a total travesty. But there's a glimmer of hope, because the Diabetes Caucus, that should have been on top of this in the first place, a Democrat and a Republican senator. So it is Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire, a Democrat, and Susan Collins of Maine, a Republican. They co-chair the Diabetes Caucus in the Senate. And it's Susan Delgette and Tom Reed that chair it in the House. And they came together and they said, nope, we need to do a better bill in the Senate. And they were asking for stakeholder input. So they announced that they had some priorities in crafting the Senate bill answer to this really terrible, horrible, no good, very bad misnomer of a bill, completely disingenuous name, since it doesn't lower the cost of insulin. So their priorities were making sure that PBMs weren't collecting rebates. Quite frankly, just start with insulin. Why not craft it so that there is no such thing as a legalized kickback for insulin? Because there shouldn't be. And then you get rid of the whole problem of the cost. That's how you lower the cost. So I don't know if they'll be brave enough to go that far, but everyone who is listening to this should look up both senators and their congressmen's numbers and call them and say, to lower the cost of insulin, I know that you have to get rid of the kickbacks that the PBMs can collect. And if you don't have the will to do that, at least make them transparent. And by the way, once you're done doing that, make those kickbacks transparent for every other drug in America. How about that? Is that a good assignment?
Well, it is a good assignment. And I'll tell you something. A lot of times people think it doesn't do any good. But even out here, and as they call it, California, when we had a list of bad bills that everybody just knew would pass, people telephoning in, sending emails, even to legislators that weren't in your district, did the job. These things, even though they'd gotten out of committee, they were not voted on. And so it does work. It does help. And I think you're right talking about insulin, because that's very sexy. It's in the news. People know what it is, and people need it. So this is the one to push for. And then, like you say, then all the other things will follow once this whole kickback scheme comes to light.
Can I tell you something shocking that CVS did in California?
Do tell.
Okay. And then before, I hope we have time to reveal some of the people who seem to be backing up the kickbacks, but
yes,
we'll get there in a moment.
Because I have a question I definitely want to ask.
Oh, good. Goody. Yes. So you mentioned how the CVS owned the insurance company Aetna and could incentivize their patients to go there by zero copays by going to the CVS Minute Clinics, right? And then, of course, while they're at the Minute Clinics, they could, you know, suggest that the patients get prescriptions if they wanted to, or stop off in aisle 5 and make sure you get that ankle brace, the CVS brand. There is just a welter of conflicts of interest that one can, you know, manipulate there, right? Well, when CVS merged with Aetna, during the merging, and this detail did not escape me, they announced that they were going to increase their Minute Clinics around the country. But you know what they said? Doctors need not apply. Physicians need not apply. Marilyn, Dr. Singleton, mm-hmm. You and I both went to medical school and did residency training. It was, you know, 4 tough years of college, 4 years of medical school, you know, and then for moving on past there, anywhere between 3 and 11 years of residency training. But CVS announced that they were going to use exclusively nurse practitioners in their Minute Clinics. Now, nothing against well-trained nurse practitioners, but frighteningly, there's a lot of young students that are going to college, getting a degree in nursing, working 3/4 time, and taking an online course to complete a doctorate of nursing practitionery. And California just passed last year, the ability for nurse practitioners to function as physicians. Now, I don't mind if a patient understands and chooses to have a nurse practitioner as their clinician, but if they don't understand what the level of training of a clinician is, you know, it doesn't seem fair. And I guess what I will add is I don't really mind that nurse practitioners are practicing nurse practitionery, but they want to try to legislate in every state to be practicing medicine. Medicine is defined by the House of Medicine and defined by our training. And, you know, you can't come along and just say, I'm a doctor, you're a doctor, everyone's a doctor, and therefore we're practicing medicine. You're not, you're practicing nurse practitionery. Keep practicing, but own what you have and be proud of what degree that you have. And what CVS did the year that they pushed for this, they call it full practice authority. I call it, a non-supervised practice of medicine by non-physicians. But what CVS did that year was they hired every medical lobbyist in the state. They just hired them so no one else could hire them. So the people in California, the physicians that might have spoken out and pointed out the difference in training, their hands were tied. They didn't have any lobbyists that they could go to lawmakers in California to tell them, you know, what the difference in training was and how this could be harmful to patients.
Boy, that's a whole nother topic. And I'm sure I want to have a show on that because there's so much to this whole story. And too many people think, oh, it's just a turf war and you don't like nurses. But that's a whole bigger story. In our 5 or 6 minutes we have left, I want to get into something that I saw on the Twitterverse, that you were having a tiff with our revered AARP. So tell us about that. What got that started?
Well, I wrote an article. I think the title was AARP and the advantage of the something of skeezy reality. Skeezy was in the title. I'll have to go look it up. But in the article, what I described was how the AARP is not speaking for what its members want it to do. So when President Trump was president, his HHS secretary announced the rebate rule, in which the kickbacks were going to flow to the patients and not to the PBMs and the insurance companies. And the AARP membership, 85% of them were supportive of this because they realized they wanted to get rebates for real. Like, most people don't realize that it's actually kickbacks and that the patients aren't getting them because they use the word rebate. Very disingenuous right there. But I wrote this article to expose the fact that despite the fact that 85% of AARP's members were supportive of the rebate rule, the AARP themselves spoke up against the rule and in support of the kickbacks flowing to the insurance companies and the PBMs. Now, why? Why, oh, why, oh, why would this organization that calls itself one of the country's biggest nonprofits be about kickbacks, be about profits via kickbacks? Why? Because the AARP doesn't make its money through membership. Oh, no. The AARP makes its money primarily through royalties that they get by putting their AARP stamp of approval on Medicare Advantage plans that are sold by United. The AARP is frankly an arm and a shill for United Healthcare, who owns one of the three big PBMs, Optum. So they're not going to speak out against the interests of the money that's in their pockets. And even former presidents of the AARP have pointed out this enormous conflict of interest. The AARP should be putting on a banner that says United Healthcare and Optum every time they show up in a congressional office. And no matter what I do, they'll either come after me. So when I wrote this article and put it out there in the Twitter world, one of the vice presidents from Washington, D.C., they wrote a letter to the editor of the 14 Pennsylvania papers where this skeezy reality in the AARP article was written. And they implied that I was a shill for pharma. Well, that's ridiculous. You can go look me up on the very, very transparent Physician Sunshine database and discover that since 2016, I think I've taken a $34 lunch from a pharmaceutical company, and that's it. The average for what physicians take is $3,400, by the way. So I'm like, you know, 100 times lower than that.
Well, but you are a cheap date.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of funny though, isn't it? Like the vice president from DC, like, so I'm opening up my local morning paper and I'm like, wow, look, they're writing about me again. They're attacking me. Must've done a good job. I guess I got to them.
That's fantastic. Well, I think a lot of people are figuring out that AARP is not really for the people, that they are out for themselves. And what I'll tell you what I hated about AARP is the day I turned 50, I had some materials from them in my mailbox. And it's like, you sneaks, what are you doing? Looking up the census and finding everybody's birthday? I touched it like it was cooties. It's like, please, I don't want your stuff. And don't remind me, I just turned 50. So there.
I might be happier when I'm 65, but at 50, you're right. I'm not going to be so happy. Oh, well, I passed that milestone. There's actually a better organization. And they're I love their healthcare platform, the Association of Mature American Citizens, who does take members at 50 and above. They are very pro-transparency. They have been publicly speaking against the kickbacks, which is wonderful. And they're very pro another model that you probably talk about on the show, direct primary care. So I think they have wonderful healthcare thoughts. And you know, healthcare should be important, not only to our seniors, but it should be important. It is important. It's important to everyone in the country. And if our seniors don't help their kids and their grandkids, they're not going to be able to save for the future because we're spending too much on healthcare, and drug costs are certainly a big part of that. Follow the money.
Absolutely. Well, you know, all I can say is if Senate is slow to act and they need more education on it, I just heard just this April that Louisiana is suing United Health's Optum. And guess what? For everything that you said, so, you know, we know you're not full of beans, they're suing them for bilking their Medicaid department of billions of dollars because of the inflated prescription prices. So there you go. I mean, and you know, they've got the evidence that they're going to launch a big lawsuit and they want to expose secrecy. Yeah. So there you go.
I'd love my state, Pennsylvania, to be suing, but our attorney general won't touch the PBMs, it seems.
Well,
he's running for governor.
You know, yeah, of
must
course.
Be a problem.
That there's all it takes is one to get it started. And when it comes to doctors, all it takes is a Dr. Mass. And she doesn't keep quiet about all this. So where can people find you and your work?
So I'm on LinkedIn, and my name is spelled, the last name is Mass, just like it sounds, you know, like when you go to Catholic Church. And my first name is Marion, spelled with an O at the end, M-A-R-I-O-N. I'm on LinkedIn, and I do accept messages there. And I'm at Twitter at @Mass_Marion. So you can find me in those two places. You can find me on the PPA website. We do a blog there. My latest blog piece on there was a cute little rhyme, a Dr. Seussian style rhyme of how corporate medicine is destroying America. You know,
well,
the greedy corporates don't give a fig. All they do is get ever more big.
Well,
fun stuff like that.
All right.
Good time.
Well, we learned so much today and on future shows, and I'm sure I will be able to strong arm you into coming back. We'll keep on exploring how we can get medicine back to its roots and get back to the patient-doctor relationship without the middlemen. Thank you for coming, doctor. And thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud. And we have me on Mondays, Tuesdays with Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley from Concerned Doctors, Wednesdays with Dr. Peter McCullough, Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan, and Fridays with scientist Dr. James Lyons Weiler. We've got our apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And remember, the shows are at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern, and on iHeartRadio the next morning at 8. And remember, whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.